You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome back to Earth Station Trek, a show where we trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between. I'm Charles Kelso, and it's my privilege to introduce the Earth Station Trek crew, Keith Johnson.
For 50,000 years, I pursued him. And that's not a hint.
Alan Seiler.
Star Trek. Is that the one with the little wizard boy?
Veronica Daschle.
Hi.
And joining us, special guest, Vandy Beth Glenn. Welcome back, Vandy Beth.
Die with honor, O'Brien.
All right. Before we get into it, Keith, do we have some This Week in Trek this week?
Yeah, let me run through this real quick. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about. There were some seminal things that premiered in This Week in Star Trek history. Going back to the 24th of March, 1992, the final draft was submitted to the network for a little episode in TNG called The Inner Light.
Wow.
Yeah.
Heard of it.
Yeah, on everybody's list of top 10, probably Star Trek TNGs, but not mine. Oh. I think it's good. I don't love it. And
aren't you unique?
Yeah, it's a really good episode, but it doesn't involve me the way it does some people. But still, it's an excellent episode.
It is an excellent episode, not in my top 10 either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Awesome!
I think it's really good, but it's not one I just sit down and watch usually.
Nah. Yeah, same here. Also, this is ironic. 1 year later was first day of filming on another little episode that, like The Inner Light, to me established a uniqueness for a new Trek series, Duet.
Oh!
Oh my God!
Okay. TNG.
Holy smokes! What an episode!
Yeah. Every Star Trek series.
That one also isn't in my top 10, only because DS9 produced so many phenomenal episodes. But Alan, it is so good.
Alan is exactly right. It's like when we have the discussion of your top episode from the original series, it can literally change depending on the day.
Yeah.
One thing I like about Duet, like The Inner Light, is it kind of established that series on its own away from the original series. It was something not quite like anything you had seen before. It had Kira Nerys, who was a terrorist, you know, make that episode today or make that character today. Mm-hmm. And it just showed a lot about redemption and hatred and so forth. So a really great episode. One more. We're talking about the really classic ones. On the 27th of March, 1967, Final Draft was delivered to probably one of the most controversial shows in Star Trek history because of the background stuff. That was City on the Edge of Forever.
Mm, wow. Yeah.
And all we got to say is Harlan Ellison and leave it at that.
There's a lot of good stuff happened in this week.
If you're having Star Trek, do it this week.
Yeah. Exactly. And another important thing, this is great. I remember this. Charles and Veronica, I don't know if y'all remember this. On the 28th of March, 1978, at Paramount Pictures, the biggest press announcement since 1950 took place. And that was the day that Paramount and Gene Roddenberry and company announced Star Trek, the motion picture, was going to be going into official production. And it was the biggest event at Paramount since the 50s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not everything was great this week.
And the last one, I want to throw this out. We don't usually do birthdays, but we had some really important ones. And it's so ironic to me. On the 22nd of March, 1931, one William Shatner was born. Mm-hmm. Still kicking. 4 days later, 1931, one Leonard Nimoy was born. Rest in peace. Mm. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And then another important one, because these are the pioneers, and again, birthday, I'll do this day, 25th of March, 1939, D.C. Fontana.
Oh, wow.
I mean, just without those three, Star Trek just wouldn't be Star Trek.
That's true.
Very true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope that I'm as active at 93 as William Shatner is.
Dude, the guy went up on SpaceX, or whatever you call it, not SpaceX, Blue Sky. What, 2 years ago?
Blue Origin.
Blue Origin, right. Hey.
He's going to Antarctica next.
Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. That's this week in Trek.
Awesome. Well, this week we're going to be talking about fugitives in Star Trek. But first, there was a huge article from Variety this week that dropped a lot of interesting stuff about what's upcoming in Star Trek. So we wanted to do a new segment, which we've not done in a while, and spend some time talking about that. Now, Alan, you've got it sort of right at your fingertips there.
Yeah, this article came out 2 days ago. Well, first, another important news thing that came out that happened this past week, because this is a great week for Star Trek, apparently. 5 days ago, it was announced that the Section 31 movie starring Michelle Yeoh had finished filming.
Yay.
Wrapped. It is going into post-production at this point, and that is pretty exciting. A few days later, which was 2 days ago, we get this major article from Variety. The article is called "The Future of Star Trek: How Starfleet Academy to New Movies and Michelle Yeoh, How the 58-year-old franchise is planning for the next generation of fans."
Wow.
And this article was written by Adam Vary, and he paid a visit to the sets, to all the active productions, including Section 31, and reported on what he was seeing, the people he talked to, and it released a couple of things that we hadn't known before. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of details about some of these upcoming series that we did not know. So this article, I'm curious to know what your reactions to this big release is.
Okay. I have two things. I'm going to go first because otherwise someone else is going to say it. One of the things was they're like, yeah, we were trying to do these big motion picture type things, but with a smaller budget, and we were trying to cut corners and do all this and save money. And I'm like, why were you importing special fabric for all of these things then? And also then they, when they were talking about Starfleet Academy, they were talking about, yeah, we're going to do something for the teenagers. And I'm like, what about the thing for the kids that you had? Where did go?
I know. That's exactly what I was thinking.
But I am very excited about what sounds basically like a promenade for Star Trek Academy, Starfleet Academy.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I am
that
too.
That sounds cool. That was the excitement point for me.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Charles.
No, go please.
They said the Starfleet Academy set may be the biggest set mm-hmm. in Star Trek history.
Yep.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, it's this atrium for the Academy. Sounds huge. It's like a big area, kind of like a hotel with like rooms around it. And
uh-oh, Charles froze.
I froze?
Yeah, you did.
Oh.
I could hear you, but your picture just a second.
Oh, I didn't even hear you. It was just nothing. Anyway, folks.
It sounds like a really massive standing set, which would be nice to have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hope there's multiple levels.
Yeah.
Like DS9.
Sure there will be. They'll have places to take the camera around and spin it and all that kind of stuff.
It says it's two-story.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, so there's got to be things on both levels and angles to shoot from at all mm-hmm. angles. That's going to be really cool.
Yeah. And they said it has a view of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
Which, considering they're building it in Toronto, means it must really be huge.
Or it's just a high altitude. they did confirm what we've suspected, and that the show is going to be in the 32nd century.
Yes.
Right.
Which is exciting. I like that.
Yeah.
I do too. I'm looking forward to exploring that time frame in a very different way. And, you know, they established in the past season of Discovery that, you know, the whole subplot there was the reopening of the Academy, and Tilly was pegged as, you know, one of the instructors. So she was pulled off the ship. And so, yeah, I mean, it looked all along like that was going to be the setup for the new series. And turns out, yep, that's the case.
Yeah.
And they wrote kind of a recruiting line in the announcement where it basically says something to the effect of something like, you know, doors open for the first time in a century. Yep. And it said, if you're 16 years old or equivalent, people who are not from Earth, you're welcome to the Academy. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that they also mentioned was that it was going to be kind of a introduction to Star Trek, because all the characters would be introduced to Starfleet and everything that the Federation represents. And that also kind of curled me because that's what Prodigy was supposed to be.
Exactly.
If only we had a show about young people who are cadets and we could bring new people to Star Trek. What a great idea.
Well, in fairness, so Prodigy is animated and live action is often can be more engaging than animation.
Okay, well, I know that some of Chuck's nieces and nephews refused to watch anything that wasn't animated.
That's true.
And not like classic animation, like the 3D animated.
Yeah.
And they would not watch anything else. Live action, nothing.
I like the idea of doing a show that's targeting new people and young people.
I do.
I don't know that Paramount Plus is the best home for that.
Yes.
No. Man. You're not going to bring in any new people on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, it's going to be... Well, I mean, there may be people who are there for something else that they're wanting to get to watch. But I don't know if there's still even a CW, but an equivalent of a CW seems to me like a place to put a show like that.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely. Mm. So one of the things that really stood out to me was I think that this article kind of captures and reflects the in a way that I don't think any other article has done so far, captured the absolute devotion to this franchise from all levels of these productions, from cast and crew. Right. Like, you know, people talking about how they played Star Trek on the playground when they were in second grade, you know, and things like that, that I feel like there's a segment of fandom that really kind of skewers these productions. And, you know, this isn't real Star Trek and these people don't know what they're doing and they don't know anything about Trek and blah, blah, blah. And this, I think, did a really great portrait of these people and their understanding of and their dedication to what this franchise is and what it means to the point where Olatunde, who is directing, which one was it that he's directing? Is it 31?
Yeah.
Where he's saying, His goal is, are we doing good? Is this show putting good into the world? Are we as crew people putting good into the world? What an incredible mindset to have going into a job.
Yeah.
That's and having a job that inspires that kind of mindset. That is just amazing.
Absolutely.
Right. And Anson Mount and Ethan Peck, as they were quoted, both seem to have a nerd's joy in playing their characters. Yeah.
Yes, very much so.
Well, speaking of which, we got some info about Strange New Worlds as well.
Yeah. There's going to be a spy episode.
Yeah. And Jonathan Frakes said it's the best episode of television he's been involved with.
That's incredible. What a thing to say, man.
Like, I mean, how?
Because he's done some good stuff.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, absolutely. We got a peek at the new set, this new lab set.
That was beautiful.
It has like swirling water underneath the floor.
Yeah, why does it have water under the floor?
Dolphins.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, but I don't see how that's going to really work.
That would be awesome.
Dolphins in a 4-foot deep pool. Right.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that like you were getting at, Veronica, where they talk about cutting corners for the movie and stuff like that, but then they go overboard on some of the expenses that they, you know, everything's too elaborate and they have special fabrics they ship in and they're putting swirling water underneath the lab floor set when you really could have redressed the existing lab. You know what I mean? It looks nice.
Maybe you have to get that kind of expensive fabric though for HD.
Maybe.
Like I remember reading once that a lot of old shows, when the HDTV revolution happened, had to rebuild all their sets because with the higher resolution, they just looked like the plywood that they were. So maybe you got to have rich fabrics for.
Yeah, that's probably the thinking, but I think they go overboard with it. But I'm not in television. That's just my opinion as a layman sitting at home.
Where would you rather they spend their money?
I would rather they made Star Trek more cheaply than they do. And so you don't need as many viewers, because I think they're overspending for the amount of viewers that they're going to get. But like I said, this is I'm playing Monday morning quarterback here.
Monday morning money quarterback,
right?
And then we got some information about Section 31, including an important guest character.
Yes.
I mean, I guess we can say she just put it all over our Facebook page anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rachel, what's her name?
Rachel Garrett. Yeah,
Rachel Garrett.
Yeah. The captain of the Enterprise C. As a younger woman, which may establish the time frame. We've been wondering when it's going to be set. She stepped through the Guardian on Discovery. We didn't know where she wound up. Now, it could also be that this is a time travel adventure and who knows who shows up, or it could be that they got Rachel Garrett in the wrong time frame. You know, they could be saying that she was 100 years old.
Right. These people who didn't know all about Star Trek got that wrong.
It could be. But no, it may well be that it's set during the Lost era, as the fans have called it, between the movies and Next Gen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which would be fine with me. I mean, they're going to reimagine anything they do anyway, visually. But at least in this case, I mean, the assumption has been that Star Trek just looked like the movies until Next Gen started. Because anytime you see a flashback to anything before Next Gen, they're wearing like the movie uniforms and using the movie sets and the movie ships. So I think there's room to play there. And I think that's an interesting time to set it.
Yeah, definitely.
Why did they jump from A and B to D?
Because they wanted to jump into the future. To make it more, they could be more advanced and do exciting things. It's 100 years later, so they're not tied to what was going on Star Trek. The movies were still going on at the time. They didn't want it to be like the movies junior and to do a different thing.
I'm excited that Casey Rohl will be playing Captain Garrett.
I'm not familiar with her.
Well, she was on a great series called The Magicians, where she played the hedge witch, Marina Andreescu, but she also played the Marina Andreescu of Timeline 23, an alternate timeline within the show of The Magician. So she already has relevant experience for playing playing Captain Garrett.
There we go.
Nice.
Yeah, I just thought she looks the part. When they have the picture of the two actresses side by side, I was like, yeah, I'd buy that.
Yeah.
I hope she's done her homework and watched that one episode that had Rachel Garrett.
Yeah, like, it's not a big ask. Come on.
Yeah.
Right. Get the mannerisms right, get the voice right. That's all I ask.
Right.
All right. Well, Tiger Blade 2002 chimes in by saying, "Hey y'all.
Hey y'all.
What's up, Wayne? Nice to see you, buddy."
No, I think it's exciting. I'm glad that they're doing these big announcements about big, exciting new things coming to Star Trek. Because it's felt for a while, and I said this to Veronica the other day, it's felt for a while like you're at the mall and they're starting to close the gates. You know what I mean? Like
it's
starting to wind down.
Right.
So I'm glad to see that. They also made some announcements about the Star Trek movies, another writer. Yep. And there's, at this point, I sort of take their announcements about the movies the same way I take when my daughter tells me she's definitely going to finish her schoolwork today. Okay. We'll see.
Yes.
Right.
But it's exciting that things are happening. I do hope they get the films off the ground, and I hope that they do keep producing Star Trek. They did also, they made some comment about doing more of these TV movies, and that one of them may be a follow-up to Picard, which was may jive with what Patrick Stewart was saying back in November about, you know, that there was a film script that he'd read that stars Picard. And I think it would be a good way, if they want to keep the Star Trek legacy thing warm, even though they can't do it right now, do it as a film. Bring those characters back that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
There was an article I read a couple weeks ago I was going to post about, and it was from Alex Kurtzman talking to a couple of the other folks. This is before the announcement in the news that Alan talked about. Alex Kurtzman was just talking about how blessed and fortunate he feels to be in the Star Trek universe. And it reminded me of that thing that people say is that no one really sets out to make a bad movie, even if you hate the movie. Alex Kurtzman is not loved by a lot of people because of, you know, some of his aesthetics and some of his direction. But reading that article, it reminded me that you sometimes need to be very careful about taking this stuff personally, you know, like hating somebody because they don't do what you want. And there's a lot of people who hate Alex Kurtzman or who hate, you know, this person or that. And just reading articles, I looked at it, it reminds me, okay, even if I don't agree with all of his direction, you don't hate somebody for doing something sincerely that you don't necessarily agree with all the time. And then the article we're talking about today from Variety, you guys talk about, it just puts that kind of back into perspective, is they're doing the best they can. You know, they're younger, they have different ideas than some of us do, but they're doing the best they can. And I think that's what's all about. And Star Trek is definitely about diversity. If you don't love this show, there's another one that you will love. And I think that's what's great about Star Trek.
Yeah.
For me, it seems like Kurtzman thing is that he likes to find a creator with a vision and then help them execute that vision. Now, sometimes that works out really well and we love it. And sometimes it's, they produce something that I don't love, you know what I mean? But I think that that's, for good or bad, I think that's really what he tries to do.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you get a Mike McMahon or a Terry Metalis, and sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
Another thing about this article is that it came out a couple of days ago. We are as of this live show, as of this recording, we are 1 week away from Discovery Season 5. Oh, we have been on a hiatus for a little while now. We haven't had any episodes coming out. So this is kind of like a new start for the coming year of Star Trek. Has there been any promotion? Has there been anything that's like kind of getting people excited? Has there been anything to gear fans up for this new viewing
experience? They've had like, what, two...
They debuted. Trailers? Yeah, they had some trailers and they debuted the show at South by Southwest, and so there was a lot of reviews coming out surrounding that. There's not billboards on Times Square or anything, I don't think, like they did for like Picard season 3, and there's like subway posters of Seven of Nine and things like that.
Yeah. But there's nothing like online even, but that I've seen. I mean, yes, there have been trailers, but they aren't recent. There's not anything that's happening right now to get people to know that these things are happening in a week from now.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but Alan, there is that YouTube video of Sonequa Martin-Green talking with Tawny Newsom with the Rose City.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, but even that was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
And they're both sitting in easy chairs talking about their philosophy of acting. So that doesn't excite people.
I loved it.
I thought it was phenomenal.
Well, I think this Variety article is part of the promotion, though. I mean, there's no coincidence that this drops the week before the show comes out.
Oh, I agree.
My first thought was like, I can't believe they didn't wait for First Contact Day. Well, of course they did, and they've got a show debuting on Thursday. So, they want to get some excitement drummed up now. But I don't know. I don't think Paramount Plus has the marketing budget to push like they might want to. But, I mean, I'm excited for the show. I'm excited to have it back. And considering that France TV station just dropped Prodigy, I'm wondering when Netflix is going to drop it, if it's going to be right in the middle of Discovery.
Oh, God, I know. I don't think we can handle that.
Easter famine around here.
Right. Yeah.
I tried logging my VPN into a server in France and then loading up Netflix to see if I could see the new episodes of Prodigy. But Netflix is smarter than I am.
Well, it's not on Netflix there. It's on France TV. So you have to go to the France TV website. But if you speak French, yes, but they don't have subtitles or captions in English.
May we?
I tried. All right. Did we cover it?
I think we did.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Fugitives or Fugitives in the Star Trek universe. So stay right there.
Hi, this is Siri. I would never, never ever listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. Who the heck says howdy anyway? Why don't you listen to Chris Hardwick instead? I can get you his information. The Nerdist is everywhere anyway, haha. That was a joke. The Earth Station 1 podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstation1.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
And we're back. And Vannibeth, you suggested this topic of fugitives in the Star Trek universe. So do you want to kick it off and tell us what your thoughts were?
Yes. Well, let me begin by saying if I had any idea that you were going to invite me onto the show to talk about it, I would never have suggested this topic.
I was like, great, you're in.
You'll be more careful with your suggestions from now on.
I almost became a fugitive myself. What are you running from? Earth Station Trek.
As most people do.
Right.
Fugitives are I think something that we've dealt with. There have been storylines dealing with fugitives. Fugitives from justice, fugitives from a natural disaster, throughout Star Trek, ever since the original series. And I can see the appeal because, if somebody shows up who's desperate, it automatically gives you some drama and some conflict. Mm-hmm. So, you can build good stories around that.
Yeah. And it has a natural structure because you meet the person and then inevitably someone's on their heels who's more dangerous.
You know? Right.
That's the thing.
And maybe.
And then someone falls in love with them.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because the one I was thinking of was Tosk.
Because O'Brien fell in love with Tosk.
Hey, man. Yeah, I love Tosk. I think, I mean, and he's not a fugitive from justice. It's just part of his culture, and he's happy to be a fugitive. But and it has that same sort of setup. It's an interesting twist on that dynamic where he doesn't want to have asylum. He wants to go on the run. That's what he does.
Yeah, that's his job. That's what he's all about.
Right.
It's a fascinating concept. I love the mentality of it. It's very cool.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it in a long time though.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, it also has an old school Star Trek aesthetic, which is about the definition has changed, but the prime directive used to be people thought it was if you were not a warp capable species, you didn't tell them about warp capable species. Mm. Then with TNG and later that evolved to non-interference. That meant non-interference in other cultures, whether they were spacefaring or not. And so one of the issues with the Tosk thing is Tosk was bred to be prey. That's his job. And he feels honored, quote unquote, to be prey because he was bred to be prey. And the problem is, Sisko is basically telling O'Brien, this sucks, but it's not our business. And it's a weird thing because you'd like to say that you would not let that happen, but it's technically another race's. Now, they can't be in the Federation because the Federation has a clause that says you cannot have slavery, end of story. Mm-hmm. And you can't have things like suppression of, say, women and genders and other races, but that's not their society. And that was the whole problem. What I love about the end of Tosk is when O'Brien... spoilers for those who haven't seen it, when O'Brien does a little thing to let Tosk get away, Sisko gives him one of his famous speeches, and he starts yelling and basically says, Keiko O'Brien is not going to have to complain about being on Deep Space Nine because he's going to be basically God if it happens again. And then he goes, Commander, there was a little power interruption that basically helped him get away. It turns out Sisko helped him too on the slide. Love it.
Yeah, I love when Odo's going after him. He says, take your time, Constable.
It's a great one.
Yeah. Well, Vannevath, who's one that you were thinking of?
Well, I thought of Tosk originally too.
Sorry. And
thanks, Charles.
See, I wasn't counting him as a fugitive because it was what he does.
Well.
Well, yeah, but what he does is be a fugitive.
Hmm.
Yes.
There's one in every crowd.
Chuck but was quizzing me on them earlier.
Well, when I was getting ready for this episode, I decided to go to the IMDb and look through the episodes for every series because I know you can find characters like this in every series.
Oh yeah.
And I very quickly realized that there have been a lot of Star Trek episodes. So
this is true.
A few.
I didn't make it through the whole series, but one classic episode from the original series is The Conscience of the King, where Kodos the Executioner is a fugitive from justice. And it's sort of a murder mystery episode because Kirk and Spock, well, mainly Kirk, but also Spock, are trying to work out whether this Thespian who has come to, was it a starbase that it was set on?
On planet Q.
Planet. Okay.
I don't name the planets.
whether he might be Kodos, and it turns out he is Kodos the Executioner, who is a mass murderer. And, you know, we'll always have to wonder whether what would have become of him if he had been captured, if he had been exposed and captured, because he just, as they say, not lived to face justice.
Yeah.
Just out of, I just want to interject super quick here. This was the first one that I thought of. And I'm not normally the guy who first thinks of original series episodes. Other things come to mind first. And I wasn't going to mention it because I was like, well, Keith is going to bring this one up. Because he, this is one of his go-tos. So he's going to mention this one. And I was going to time it to see how long it would be before Keith brought it up. 4 minutes, but it wasn't Keith who did it.
It's a great one.
It is a great one. It really is.
It's a great episode. It is such, it's so original Trek, which I love about original Trek, because it's first season, first half of the first season. And I love it because it is an absolute study what Gene Roddenberry wanted to do, which these are not perfect people, because Kirk is really kind of sort of bent on vengeance. And when he tears Caridian down, and his daughter, who turns out, well, we know what happens with his daughter, and she basically says, there's a stain of cruelty on your shining armor. And then Kirk says, she asks Kirk, who are you to decide who lives and who dies? And he says, who do I have to be? And I love it because Kirk goes just to the edge of becoming a vengeful man. That's what Roddenberry was all about with Trek. I love that. That's the feelings we would all have, but he pulls back. Mm. I love it. Kirk is all too human, but he just pulls back. Because at one point, when they, ironically, it's so funny nowadays, they couldn't get a voice print, and I guess they didn't have DNA in the future, but... But there's a scene where Kirk says, if I were sure you were Caridian, I mean, you were Kodos, you might not walk out of this room alive. I just love that. Mm-hmm. Such a great show.
Yeah. And he's a Nazi. I mean, this was the 60s when they were finding Nazis in Argentina. And this takes place 20 years after the end of World War II, or it was made 20 years after the end of World War II. And his story is this happened 20 years ago. This is very much a parallel. It's like, you know, finding a Nazi. Yeah, well, the rules say I'm not supposed to punch him in the face, but guess what?
I've read enough Captain America to know, yes, I do punch Nazis in the face.
Right. Veronica, you had suggested an interesting one.
7 of 9.
Okay, that wasn't the one I thought of.
Oh, which one did you do? Whoa, Chakotay.
Because
Chakotay was a fugitive.
When we met Chakotay, he was a fugitive.
True.
One that became a main character on the show for 7 years following that. Yeah. Which doesn't usually happen in these episodes.
And unfortunately, they didn't really explore that in very many ways at all. He just becomes a regular old Starfleet officer.
This is true.
Yeah.
Well, we have a... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I thought that was a great one. I didn't even think about that.
I wouldn't even. And 7 of 9. That's not one that I really would have thought of either. Because you think of guest characters, you don't think of your main cast.
Yeah.
So
right.
Those are two really smart ones there, Veronica.
Yeah. Yay, look at me.
I know. Right. I got a couple of really interesting suggestions in the comments. The first one, an unnamed Facebook user says that Bashir being taken over by a fugitive's consciousness was a clever angle.
Unfortunately, a really bad episode, but yeah, that was Rayo Vantica.
What do you mean?
That's the one. Yeah.
And my good buddy, Rob Levy, who is one of the co-hosts of Modern Musicology Podcast, says, loves him some Ensign Row.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she, and that's sort of the opposite of Chakotay, where she became a fugitive later. When
we don't really see much of her life as a fugitive.
True.
Yeah.
That's worthy of a spinoff. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that we got her in Picard. I'm glad that we got a resolution to her arc, and we found out a little bit about what happened in that time, and we saw the way that her story ends. Mm-hmm. And I was super happy about that. But that would be that whole like Maquis situation would be a really interesting series, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alan, did you have one?
Well, no, just Conscience of the King.
Because I was gonna follow up what we were saying about Veronica's characters, about them being, you know, main characters, is the cast of Star Trek Prodigy.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
Fugitives throughout the entire first season.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we actually see it from our cast perspective this time. You know, usually you're meeting a fugitive. In this case, we're following them the entire season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you guys got me thinking all kinds of different ways now.
Outside the box.
Yeah, all kinds of different ways.
Right.
I've got another one that I suspect y'all haven't thought of.
Okay.
The season 4, episode 22, titled Half a Life.
Okay.
In that one, Luxana Troi is dating a man from a planet from a planet with mandatory euthanasia at the age of 60.
Yeah.
And she convinces him to ask for asylum. And it's sort of complementary, I think, to that Deep Space Nine episode, because it is part of their culture. And you know, maybe the right move for Picard would have been to force him to go back to his home planet.
Yeah, but right.
Tosk never asked for asylum, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Asking for asylum and saying, hey, I want to leave this culture is one thing, and forcing them to change their culture is different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think the hallmark of Star Trek is that they should be honoring the cultures of these people who come along, and letting Tosk escape. That's the right decision, because really everybody, that's what everybody wants, is for including Tosk, you know, and even the other guys who are demanding him back. What they really want is to chase him down. They don't want him to be handed over, you know.
Mm-hmm. A Facebook user mentions an episode that we talked about at the beginning of the show tonight, and that is, would Duet count as a fugitive episode?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I think so.
He pretended to be one.
It's sort of an inversion of the fugitive episode, but I think it still falls in the category. Yeah,
I know the episode, but I don't remember which one it is.
That's the one where they thought they discovered that guy was the commandant of a camp that was
a labor camp.
Yeah. But it turned out that he was the file clerk there and had faked being that guy, so he would be found out because he felt guilty because he'd been there.
Oh, that's right. That's
and he
right.
wanted to see justice done.
Okay.
It was a super good episode.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I remember the episode. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's basically two people talking to each other.
Yeah.
And it is the most riveting drama Star Trek has ever done.
Uh-huh. With twists and turns in the storyline.
Yes. And then Wayne says, this podcast definitely makes us look into Trek episodes more deeply. So kudos, Vandy.
Yay. Good job.
Yeah, Half a Life was on my list too, because it actually points out the type of Star Trek we talk about, which is there's fugitives who are quote unquote bad, who everybody would agree are bad. Example I thought of was the Klingons in Heart of Glory with Worf. They destroyed an entire ship of fellow Klingons. They got to go. And then you have someone like Tennyson in Half a Life, who comes from a freaking planet where they kill you at age 60. And given the technology that he's getting ready to try to redo a sun, I bet they could extend life past 60, but they kind of, they'd be like, well, whatever, 60, you're getting old, got to die.
Right.
Also, if I'm not mistaken, I think Michelle Forbes played his daughter who came to the ship and said, you got to die because you're going to become a burden on us. So that was, she was incredibly not Ensign Row in that episode, let's just say.
Yeah, those really weird things also killed that security guy who jumped around the corner and tried to get him.
Another one I thought of right along those veins is an episode that I actually like. It's called Transfigurations from TNG.
Oh, wow.
And that's an episode where they meet a guy that Geordi just dubs John. He's the one where he's being chased by his people. He has no memory of who or what he is, but he starts exhibiting strange energy powers. And it turns out this is a real throwback to the original series. He is basically, his people are evolving genetically. And they are getting to the point where they can literally evolve into energy. But because he and a whole bunch of people like him are different, his society, which looks like fascist, and you can tell they're fascist because they wear gloves. you can always tell a bad society they wear gloves.
They're all dead.
Yeah. They're basically hunting his people down and killing them. And they've been killing them just before they turn. And in this episode, because Picard and them basically say, we don't know what's going on, but we're going to give you, sanctuary. He actually goes to the next level and becomes a being of incredible energy. And that's one of those episodes, again, it's so Star Trek. He's just different. His people had not threatened his people. They did nothing wrong. They were just different. And that was good enough. And even at the end, when he turned, he told the guy who was hunting him, I can take you to the next level. And the dude's like, don't touch me. Basically, you guys are freaks and you need to die. And if that's not Star Trek, there's nothing, nothing else is.
That's a good pull, Keith. That's an episode that never comes up.
I know. That's what I was thinking too. As soon as he said it, I was like, who would ever think to mention that?
Right. Good episode.
Yeah, it is.
Good job.
And one of the characters was black on the left side and white on the right side.
The other thing about Transfigurations that's funny and sad is Geordi gets his mojo. because it starts out showing Geordi as a sad sack who can never talk to women. And
again.
Yeah. And he merges with John, and then he's like John Travolta walking down the corridors, and he gets a girl, and she's like, oh, Geordi, and they go out on a date. It's kind of pathetic, but it's funny.
Geordi is staying alive, staying alive.
He's all of a sudden the cool kid in an 80s movie, high five of people going down the hall.
Oh, God. That's
well,
so
one
funny.
Of my favorite ones is Admiral Jarok from The Defector.
That
just a great performance, just great episode all around. He's got Jakar from Babylon 5 chasing him, and right. It's just a great episode. I just love that character. Yes. I mean, that actor has been a bunch of Star Trek characters. Yeah. But he's just fantastic every time.
James Sloyan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's been a lot of things.
Yeah,
he's great though.
Yeah, he's one of those guys you just like him every time he turns up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he was one of the better Voyager episodes too, DS9.
He's on DS9. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's the Jeffrey Combs we never think to talk about.
Yeah, right.
We're going to have to do a James Sloyan episode sometime.
The makeup's too good. But I think that's a great episode. And I think that it's got a great twist to it. And like I said, great performances all the way around.
Yeah, what I like about it too is and spoilers for those who haven't seen it, I'm thinking of the Sweatmans. But I was thinking about the one scene is when he reveals himself, who he really is. And then Picard's like, basically, long story short, you know, he's trying to stop what he thinks is a war because he thinks the Romans are getting ready to attack. And then Picard's asking him for information, troop moves, and he says, I will not betray my people. And it's such a tough thing. Picard says, you've already betrayed your people. Yeah. You're already a traitor. And basically, you need to take it all the way if you're going to. What a thing to have to hear.
Yeah. You already made that choice, buddy.
Yeah.
That was one of the ones that when I found out what this week's topic was, because somehow I just didn't know that happens sometimes, was there's a couple of different Romulan situations where we get and Tomalak is one of my favorite Romulan characters. Yeah. And so the one that we're talking about here, but also it reminded me, and I guess this didn't come to mind at first because it doesn't really focus on or deal with the fugitives, but the Troi episode where she is, of course, turned into a Romulan bad guy who's going to come after, you know, and it's all about helping these Romulan defectors. So they are fugitives. It's about helping fugitives get out of where they are, but it doesn't actually deal with the, you know, because the episode is about Troi and her situation, but you know, there's a couple of different things there with Romulans, and certainly, you know, the episodes with Spock where there's that underground movement who are, you know, the unification and all that stuff. There's an element of fugitivism there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the Romulan Empire is kind of like a USSR or North Korea where, I mean, when you meet someone, they're trying to get out. You know, there's some people are trying to get over the fence and out of there, you know, and they've got the Gestapo on their heels.
Yeah. And I think one of the cruelest human injustices of all, and it's funny you said that, Charles, because I thought about this episode and I written in my notes, North Korea, USSR, et cetera. The cruelest thing of all is when people want to make you stay in a place so they can abuse you. You know, because it looks bad for them if you leave. It's horrible. You know, a North Korean can get, if they're lucky, 10 years in jail just for trying to leave. If they're lucky, they can get executed for trying to escape and their family can be jailed. And you think about, geez, that's what a horrible thing. No, stay here so we can abuse you. That's like one of the worst things a human can do to another human being.
Yeah, because they don't want the people to think that escape is an option. You know,
right.
You have all kinds of people doing it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a Facebook user who says Gambit was perhaps not a fugitive episode, but Picard as a pirate is still fun.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Well, yes. The premise of this episode is not only fugitive episodes are fun.
These are all the episodes that we watch.
you could name any other sort of episode that wasn't the fugitive episode and say that it was fun, and and that's great.
Don't pick on our listeners. We don't have that many. Come on.
Yeah, there's only six.
So who else has got one? I mean, you, Vannie Beth, you mentioned the Charon earlier, black on one side, white on the other side.
Right.
But that's exactly the same thing. There's only, at this point, there's only two of them left of the society. And it's the one guy still chasing the other guy, you know? Yeah,
right.
Right.
The only thing we have left is this conflict, and we're not going to give it up.
Well, and another big, I think, fugitive character, we already mentioned Seven of Nine, but before her was Hugh in the episode I, Borg, who regained or gained his individuality and then was at least temporarily a fugitive from the collective.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and then he ended up in that thing with Lore. I mean, do we consider Lore? He's not really a fugitive. No one's really chasing Lore. Lore's just sort of out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess to be a fugitive, you've got to have somebody after you.
Yeah.
One thing I like about let this be your last battlefield. It's always weird to me at the end. They beam down to the planet and they say the entire planet is basically covered with dead bodies that are unburied. They beam down to the planet and then Kirk like, okay, go to our next assignment. And so he left them there.
It's like, F these guys. If you want this planet, you can have it.
Yeah. And obviously as a black person, the show resonates with me because at the end of the day, it's basically, you know, it's basically white people from the South chasing slaves down. However, again, being Star Trek, the very slight kind of sort of twist is the good guy who's being chased by what is basically the slave master, the racist. You do call in the question what he has been like, because he kind of says, it's Lokai. Lokai writes the Lokai and Beale. Yeah. And Beale says that Lokai, who he's chasing on every planet, he's found fools. And then you hear him giving the speech to the crew. His path is probably righteous, but you do also kind of wonder how many other people has he used? Did he, you know, has he also, because there's a thing about don't become the thing you hate. And so you kind of wonder if maybe both of them, one fighting for the wrong, one fighting for the right. You wonder if both of them have become so corrupted. And I love at the end when Uhura said, do you think their hate was all they ever had? And Kirk says, no, but it's all they have left. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was a really powerful lesson. Because again, just being personal, growing up as a black person in Texas, hearing my dad being told about how he was called the N-word at a job when he's 40 years old. Mm-hmm. And he could not, just like I could do nowadays, up and quit. He couldn't do it. And you learn how sometimes if you let it, hatred, even hatred, there's a thing in the Bible called anger of the righteous, but you can learn that even righteous anger can go too far. And I sometimes wonder if both of those guys went too far, the good and the bad, quote unquote.
Speaking of righteous anger, Eddington.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. There you go. Eddington's a good one.
Hmm.
I just wanted to get rid of Eddington after he said Jobert for like the 10th time. Like, dude, shoot him, Cisco.
I know it's one literary reference and it goes to his head.
That's a good one, Veronica. That is a good one.
And he's a good one because we got to know him first, usually you're meeting these people and you're trying to find out their story. He betrayed our people and he was as if he was a member of the cast there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have a little bit of that. I mean, you understand sort of more. I mean, you can see sort of Cisco, if he's not careful, going down that Bell and Loki situation where he's just going to chase Eddington forever.
Yeah.
You know, long after the Federation is dust, it'll be Cisco chasing Eddington around the universe.
Right.
Yeah, because there's the line. I'm sorry, Alan, go ahead.
No, I was just to say that's a similar parallel with what we got with Ensign Ro. Is that it's a character you know, and you have the opportunity to see the motivation for becoming a fugitive as they grow, and that's good stuff to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles, following what you said about Cisco going down the wrong path, there's that great scene where Cisco is boxing, which is funny in Star Trek, and he's hitting the bag, and he confesses to Jadzia, this is not a symbiote with seven lifetimes. This is not a telepath. This is not a blah, blah, blah. It's a regular man, and he beat me. And already you hear what Cisco is saying. His pride's more wounded than anything else. Mm-hmm. His morality, his Federation morals, a man fooled him. And that's why he became psycho and basically started like you're poisoning planet biosphere. Even Worf is like, you know, Worf is like, you know, there's the joke that Worf in the early series of TNG was always saying, Captain, let's fire. And he's like, nah, don't fire. When Sisko says basically destroy that planet's biosphere, even Worf's like, are you sure?
Maybe there's a peaceful option here.
Oh yeah. Boy, if you're so mad that you've out Klingon the Kleon, you have gone too far.
Right. Yeah.
Wayne chimes in by saying, what about this super soldier created by his people in one of the Next Generation episodes?
Rogadano.
Yeah. Wayne. Didn't even think of that one.
Yeah, Rogadano got a little bit of a renaissance there in pop culture, or in Star Trek. Trekkie culture when Lower Decks had the Rogadanar joke, because that was also someone you never really heard about.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool character.
Yeah, genetically engineered to be a super soldier. And then I love it because when they say basically, I love it, the end of Picard's like, hey, if you got the technology to create him, you can probably undo him. They're like, yeah, we looked into it. It's too much trouble. So we put him in prison. Right. And then the worst thing was the guy, most chilling thing, he said, first he claimed it was too much trouble, work, and money, and resources, and then he said, besides, we might need them again.
Yeah.
And then Picard's like, okay, I'm beaming up to the ship, bye.
Right. That's believable, though, if you've ever had any, if you're familiar with governments at all, like, you can see something like that happening.
Yeah, the Russians did it. The Germans did it. Heck, our own country experiment with LSD, actually trying to create telepaths. We've all done some stuff.
We've all tried to use LSD to create telepaths at one point or another.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a nickel.
Right. I'm just going to interject really quickly and say that made me think of something. We should do a show where each one of us picks a Star Trek episode that we have never talked about, that never gets mentioned. We have to do some digging. Yeah. We have to come up with one that, and then watch that episode and then explore it.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Thank you.
I thought you were going to say on LSD.
Well, I mean, that's a good idea too.
I would not talk.
Oh God!
Let's not do that.
There's some really good ones, and it looks like they're all heavy. But one that I thought about because it stands out to me as an example of, I like Star Trek Voyager, but I never thought that Star Trek Voyager lived up to the potential. But every now and then, Voyager would give an episode that just shocks you. It's so good. Oh, and for me, one of those, the episode called Counterpoint, where there is another fascist race, and God, I think they wore gloves.
Of course they did.
Yeah. Probably the same gloves.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the race where you come into the middle of it, and the Enterprise, the Voyager is being boarded. And they're being searched. And like, and you're like, and it's great because you come in the middle of it, the story, and you're going, what's going on? They're being searched. The people leave. And then Janeway says now, and then a whole bunch of people get materialized on the transporter. And you find out that this race hates telepaths. They don't trust telepaths. And they hate telepaths so much, you can't have a telepath on your ship as you're passing through, never to show up again. But they're also chasing telepaths from their dominion that are trying to escape. But if they catch Voyager, there's Tuvok, who's a telepath. There's Bork, who's a telepath. They will grab all the telepaths. And it's an awesome show for the social implications. But also it's cool. It's science fiction because Janeway keeps hiding Tuvok and them in the transporter buffer. Every time they search the ship, and they keep searching the ship. They've searched the ship like a dozen times. And after a while, the doctor's like, you know, this has never been done this often, storing people in the transporter buffer. Pretty soon, they're not going to be materialized. It's a great episode, but also there's a great tete-a-tete between Janeway and the captain because they kind of sort of fall for each other. Mm. And at the end of the episode, as a spoiler, of course, she outwits him. It's great acting. It's a great episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. They all buy their gloves at Fascist Army.
Dexter's laboratory gloves.
They always reuse things on the old Star Trek shows. If I have a drawer labeled fascist gloves, so come along, you just get the gloves out. All right. So does anybody have any last one before we stop?
I have one more from Lower Decks. Season 3, Episode 2, The Least Dangerous Game. Boimler accidentally agrees to become the prey to I forget the character's name.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes.
And
that was such a fun episode.
And he's chasing Boimler all over the ship.
That's a fun one.
That was good.
Yeah. So this has been a good topic.
Yeah.
This has been. And Wayne says, see what you've started, Vandy.
Oh, yeah. We could go on this one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Where can people find more of you?
Well, my podcast, Jettison Pod, is currently on hiatus while I work through some stuff. But I am a stand-up comedian. And I am performing on Easter Sunday, just a couple of days from now, at 8 p.m.
The funniest day of the year.
Well, yeah. I'm performing at the Moonshadow Tavern in Tucker. The show starts at 8 p.m. So everyone come out if you can. I think it'll be a fun show. And if any of your listeners are in Austin, next weekend, I'm going to be in Austin for the Lysistrata Comedy Festival, which is a women-only comedy festival. And I am performing on Friday and on Saturday.
Awesome.
When I'm not
in Austin, Texas, right?
Yes, Austin, Texas.
I'm just making sure.
When I'm not on stage, you can find me eating Mexican food because it is really good in Austin.
I bet.
I will say that having seen Vandy Beth act, hilarious. Mm-hmm. Smart humor is always the funniest humor for me, and mix smart humor with an amazing delivery and man, it's killer.
Thank you.
All right, Keith, where can people find more of you?
You can find me on X and Facebook, primarily the ESO Network Facebook groups.
How about you, Alan?
You can find me on XXX.
OnlyFans?
No. I've got a couple of other podcasts. One is Doctor Who A to Z, and we have an episode coming out next Friday, which is exploring the controversial episode from the Peter Capaldi era, Kill the Moon. And I also have another podcast called Modern Musicology. And we have got some really, really good interviews coming up. And we just did a show about Rush's 50th anniversary and interviewed a Grammy Award winning recording engineer who has just opened a brand new recording studio in Muscle Shoals. And that was a great discussion. So go check us out.
And how about us, Veronica?
FeltNerdy.com.
Yep. And if you're in the Macon, Georgia area this Saturday, March 31st, you can see us at JBA in Macon.
March 30th.
Is that the 30th? Is it only 30
31st
days?
Is on the Zone Sunday.
Okay. Well, then whatever Saturday is, we'll be at JBA in Macon performing at Circus of Fools, hosted by Feral Fever. So that'll be an adult-only show. It's a circus-themed burlesque show. There's going to be crazy clowns and circus treats and fire eaters. And
that sounds so fun.
Yep, we're a special guest. They asked us to come down and be.
Oh, nice.
Yep. So great.
And cool. Then also, we have a big announcement. July the 7th, the Felt Nerdy and Dirty Show is returning to the Red Light Cafe in Atlanta. They invited us back, and we have the date set for that.
Nice.
So tickets won't be on sale probably until maybe early June, so mark your calendars for July 7th, and we'll be, I'm sure, mentioning it every time until then.
Yes.
And where else can people find us?
Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
That's right. And this week we have a discussion coming up. We did a discussion of the very first official Monkees Live album, which came out only in 2019. Or yeah, 2020. And that's the Monkees Live, the Mike and Mickey Show. And we had some, we shared some concert going experiences involving that album and some other concert experiences as well, in addition to discussing that album. So that was a lot of fun. And Veronica, do you have a closing for us this week? He asks hesitantly.
I don't know why I forget every single week.
Say something Star Trek-y.
Well, live long and prosper.
I was going to say, to give her time to come up with a closing, we should say that be back next Thursday night, because I mean, we haven't really come up with a good topic yet. I have no idea what we're going to talk about. Other than the two brand new episodes of Star Trek Discovery.
That's right. New Trek, baby.
So excited.
Yeah.
Can't wait. And also, we got to do our 160th episode sometime.
Yep, we need to record that as well because it's getting to be about that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is. Next week will be it.
Wow.
Yeah, this is better. Number 159. I can do math. Anyway.
Veronica, better closing?
Live long and prosper.
Okay.
All right. Sorry.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
The future is
See y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to Earth Station Trek. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a positive rating. You can also send us feedback at earthstationtrek@gmail.com. You can join in the fun in our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. You can also visit us online at earthstationtrek.podbean.com. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.